to introduce our speaker for tonight, Al.
Hi, my name's Al. I'm compulsive overeater. How you guys doing?
Hi, Al.
I'll keep an eye on it. I'll probably stop maybe around 6 or 5 after 6 and open up for questions. I think questions are better. Roseanne didn't come. I thought she was going to come. Tell her I say hi, and I love her. I'm really grateful to her because she's the gal that started at Reader's Anonymous. Her boyfriend was in Gamblers Anonymous, if I remember right, and she went to a Gamblers Anonymous meeting, and then she started an OA meeting. I don't talk very often at Overeaters Anonymous meetings. The last person I talked to was a gal who I sponsored in OA for, until she died for about, I think probably around 30 years, Doris Siegel. And I came into Overeaters Anonymous in 1968. That's how it started for me. How it really started for me is I quit smoking. I was sober around 5 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I quit smoking, and I went straight from cigarettes to Winchell donuts and apple fritters, whatever. Whenever you saw me, I had something. I was eating something. You know what I mean? Because I had to do it. There was no other recourse, because I mean, this is how I handled. I was unaware, because before you have a certain amount of time, before you really take the steps, what happens is you're really darkened. We're unconscious. We live a life unconscious. We go through life being unconscious, and it wasn't until I was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous for over 5 years when I came in here. And what happens is it gave me a more insight into the program, and it brought more things to the forefront in my life. Because if I really want to know why I ate, all I had to do was go on abstinence. You know what I mean? It'll be there really quick. You'll find out really quick. And how I found Overeaters Anonymous is I went to a meeting on Radford Street, and there was this guy. She told me not to mention her name anymore, but she's a movie actress, and she had a TV series, and she got up and shared that she's an alcoholic and a compulsive overeater, And so I heard her share that. And after the meeting, I went up to her, and I asked her about that. And she said that she was going to Overeaters Anonymous, and that they have meetings. And she gave me an old meeting list, they had the secretary's names and stuff like that. So I looked for a meeting, and there was no Saturday meetings, but I was living in Roland Heights at the time. Now, what drove me to the point where I had to confront my eating, I had to confront what was going on, is I had to reach a point of pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. I had to reach a point in my life where I couldn't go on anymore like that. It was totally obvious to me. I was running a sewing machine plant. I had a factory in downtown Los Angeles. I was a contractor at the time, and the operators used to tease me and call me Pan Son. And that means big fat stomach is what that means. And then I was talking, I got sober in Hawaii, and I did a little bit of talking in AA, and so a lot of people would call me Hawaii-L, because I got sober in Hawaii. And so what happens is, it was Santa Monica Sam? Well, he was in Venice, and he had the Venice meeting there at the Circle, and he invited me to come and talk to him. To come and talk at the Venice meeting at Tijuana Circle. So instead of introducing me as Hawaii, he basically as Tijuana Fats. And this is, it was just like, it was like things like that that happened in my life, you know. It's like when you hit a bottom in alcoholism, it's the things, the terrible things that happened to you that drive you to the program that really made you, you know, that really made you look at, made you look at, it made me look at myself and how unhappy I was with myself. And then when this gal shared that and I got the meeting list, so I went to the Tuesday night meeting at Hacienda Heights. It was called the Belinda Group. I think it was Tuesday or Thursday. And I went to the meeting and they had a list, they had a paper there. And they called it the gray sheet. You know. And you couldn't share at the meeting. So you had 3 weeks calling abstinence. You know, and there was no there was only one guy at the meeting. And after the meeting was shared, I went up to him and I asked, you know, because I heard him talking about food plan and calling abstinence and stuff like that, weighing and measuring. This used, when I talked about it, it used to drive Dora Siegel crazy when I talked, because she did not like that. You know, because, see, the one of the hazards of Overeaters Anonymous is that they'll find God before they'll find the food plan. You know what I mean? That's a real hazard. You know, that's a real hazard. And so, what happened? So let me get back. I lost track there. And so I asked this guy about it. He said, "Yeah, there's a food plan here." And he says, "You got to get a sponsor." And so there was a second. He said, "The secretary's name they used to put next to the meeting." He said, "Call her up." Well, she wasn't there. You know, as you call her up, she's really a very attractive woman. You want to call her up and she'll get you somebody to sponsor. So I called her up and she said, "I'll be your sponsor." And so, did I ever tell you about this? My wife, Patty. I don't know if I ever told her about that. Let me tell you what, if it wasn't for her, it was anonymous, I wouldn't be married to her. Because I wouldn't have had the self-esteem to walk up to ask her out. Even though she turned me down the first time. And so, I talked to her, see. And it was really calling, you know, calling abstinence is really important. Because number one, I found out my biggest problem is I couldn't read. I couldn't read. Because I would call her, her name is Joan. I would call up Joan, and I would tell her, I'd be looking at the food plan, and I'd say, "You know what, can I have ketchup?" She said, "Well, look on the food plan. Is it on the food plan?" And it wasn't on the food plan. I said, "No, it's not." She said, "Then you can't have it." And then another thing I asked, they, you know, I'm half Mexican. I said, "Well, can I have beans?" You know, I mean, very fine things. "Is it on the food plan?" I said, "No, you can't have it, you know." And so what my food plan was, just to tell you exactly, I got it in my mind, but it was, I'd get up in the morning, I'd have 2 scrambled eggs and an orange. And for lunch, I would have 2 pieces of chicken breasts, an 8-ounce can of dill string beans, and a couple of radishes and a couple of carrot sticks and a celery. And for dinner, I would have a 4-ounce filet. I'd buy a nice filet and I'd cook it, you know. I'd microwave, because I had a microwave. I'd microwave the filet. So. And the most acrid thing I ever had in my house was my postage stamp scale, you know, because then I would cut away till I had 4 ounces of that filet. And then I had exactly 4 ounces. Then I would cut it up. I would cut that, and I would, you know, and then I'd have 2 cups of salad, and I remember I packed the salad, the lettuce so tight inside the cup one time it exploded on me. I packed it so tight it broke open. And then, you know, and then I would have, and I would go on like a habit. For a month straight, I'd eat 8 ounces of dill string beans, you know what I mean? couldn't have peas. See, peas weren't on the food plan. You know, but I could have what's on the food plan. And that may sound ridiculous or whatever, but what it did, it got me into the program. It got me into anxiety. That's what it got me into. You know, I got very anxious, got very tore up. I remember I was in Hawaii. I went to Hawaii. And I ran into, and luckily my sponsors, AA sponsors in Hawaii, and I talked to him. And he referred me to the steps like he always did. You know, because what happens is we have to realize, why did I eat? Why, you know, what caused me to eat compulsively? You know, why was it that I, what was it in me that caused me, it was so painful that I had to stuff it down with food? You know, what was it? You know, and so what happens is when I abstain, these things come up. See, what happens is that our chance, and it works same as an AA, our chances, facts are, if I want to stay abstinent, not particularly abstinent, but I mean, I have a maintenance, but if I want to live a healthy eating life, if I have an eating and have a healthy life, and to be strong, and to be active, you know, and to be loving, and enjoy my family, and enjoy my friends, if I want to do that, and if I want to, I have a choice in my life, to come at my life from two places. I can come from guilt, or I can come from love. But one of the things about me coming from love is I have to, in a sense, I have to love myself. And it isn't like an ego love. It's like a sense of accepting who I am as I am right now. So, and what happens is, I was confused. I thought I was who I thought I was. I thought I was who I thought I was. And there's no way that facts are our chances are nil to get rid of our old ideas. And there's only one way to get rid of old ideas is to observe them, is to see what they are. You know, the first step, says that we're powerless over, I remember I was powerless over compulsive overeating. When I first came in, it was sugar and refined white starch. But now, after all these years, I'll just say I'm compulsive. I haven't returned to compulsive overeating. I eat in a sensible way. But for me to do that, I have to maintain it. I have to maintain a state of mind that is a peaceful state of mind. I have to have the sort of mind that's going to be willing to contribute to society and be loving. And not be continually thinking about what's happening to me. The reason people are observing, the reason people are wanting to know where's mine, is because they have a feeling they haven't got it. And part of the endarkenment is we have it. But we've been trained to believe that we haven't got it. I mean, I'll show you how endarkened we are. How many times have you gone to the meeting and you heard people say, "Oh man, how do I stay in the now? What do I do? How do I stay in the now? How?" Well, just stand up in the back of the meeting and ask them, "Excuse me, where do you think you are?" Wait, you must have asked your head where you were. You understand that? That's how endarkened we are. I was so endarkened, I was living in my head all the time. My life was based upon drama. My whole life was based upon drama. And do you know how you can stop drama? It's not happening. If you want to know what's happening, take a look. That's happening. There's nothing else happening. Only that. But before I could become to I mean, all your religions, I mean, even the Lord's Prayer says, give us this day our daily bread, or give today our daily bread. It doesn't say, I'm giving you a loaf today, two loaves tomorrow, day after that, three loaves. When you're 65, we'll back a whole truck up. No! It says, I'm giving it to you between now and you go to bed tonight. So do not be concerned. Do not be concerned. You have all you need between now and when you go to bed tonight. But we've been trained to believe that we haven't got it. We've been trained to believe that we're unworthy. Remember, my dad told me, whatever you do, don't hang around with Mexicans. Really? Only thing wrong is my dad was a Mexican. So immediately I just began to see myself as being less than. The next thing that happened to me when I was 7 years old, I was molested by my uncle. And I couldn't tell anybody that because that never happened to anybody in the world, but only me, and I'd never be able to say anything about that. But you see, I had begun making the number one mistake that we all do, is I begin identifying myself based upon the things that happen to me. I begin using the things that happen to me in my life to define me as who I am. Now let's go back to the answer to the whole thing. The answer is, God created us good. She created us good, never changed her mind. We're good now, we always have been, and we always will be. That's a fact. And you and I have nothing to do with it. By nature, we are all good, and we've got nothing to do with it. But what we have done is we have hung decorations of unworthiness on us, and the reason we hung it on us and people gave it to hang on to us, it wasn't their fault, because somebody told them. It wasn't my dad's fault that he told me that. He believed that. See? He believed that. And he was a big guy, so I believed he was right. And so as time went along, I began collecting the idea that I was unworthy. See? I began seeing myself based upon that. And so I took up drinking and I handled it. And then I ended up smoking. When I quit smoking, I smoked over 3 packs a day. And I checked into Seventh-day Adventist Church, you know, and they had a 5-day plan for no smoking, and I drove everybody around insane. I was riddled with resentments. You know, I just couldn't handle it. I was angry. You know, I was angry. And the reason I was angry was based upon what I was thinking. It was based upon what I was thinking. So I had to investigate. I had to investigate the way I think, you know. I had, you know, one of the strongest messages, and I'm not particularly any real religion. You know, I actually sway more towards Eastern religions than any other religion. Because religion is only religion. It's got nothing to do with this program. Religion's got nothing to do with spirituality. We're all spiritual by nature. We got that. There's nowhere we have to go to get it. You know. If we want to, you know, there's no, I mean, I found that out, I started meditating when I was sober around 10 years. As a matter of fact, I used to do meditation retreats for Overeaters Anonymous. I used to do 2-3-day retreats for OA, and 2-day retreats in San Diego, and they flew me to Chicago and Michigan. And what happens is, out of that, you realize that who we are and what we are is an extension of God. You know, and if the word God screws with you, you can see that extension of energy. You have that extension of energy in us. It's there. And part of the insanity, it says, step two says it would get returned to sanity. That God couldn't live restored to sanity. See, the insanity is that we identify with the things that we've done in our life to define us. So if I don't identify with the things in our life that those things, or if I don't identify with my job or my car or my relationship, if I don't identify with these things outside of me, then who do I identify? I mean, what do I identify with? See? What I identify with is that energy, that source inside of me. is that energy and that source inside of me. I mean, I do this, this is pretty graphic. There, I pick my nose or my nose picker. Did I scratch my ass or am I an ass scratcher? Yeah. Did I knock on the podium or am I a podium knocker? You know, before I got on the program, I would define myself to you as Al, the nose-picking, ass-scratching podium knocker. And what happened is I would suffer because of that. I would suffer because of that. See, suffering is what caused me to eat compulsively. I mean, it could cause me right now. Instead of drinking, I could just go binge. Sit out in front of a market basket with a package of oatmeal cookies and, what do you call it, that the frosting that they put on carrot cake and butter it like. Just sit out there and have a few snacks. You know, until I go to sleep. But what happens is after I took my steps, I realized that who I am and what I am, I am an extension of God. Just like you guys. Everybody here is that. Everybody here is that. I mean, who grows their hair? I mean, who grows their fingernails? Who's in charge of that? Who's in charge of running your blood? Who's in charge of pumping your heart? It's that energy that I have to identify with. That energy inside of me. I identify with, and who I am and what I am. What I am is that. What I am is that. And what I did is I went over here and I picked my nose. I went over here and I scratched my ass. I went over here and I knocked at the podium. At what time did I become any of those things? I never become any of those things. Because who I am and what I am is an extension of God. And whatever I do in my life is what I do. It's got nothing to do with me. Because there's a great part of the time in my life that what I'm going to do is I'm going to make mistakes. But the natural course of events in life, the natural movement in life is to make mistakes. That's part of the way it goes. That's a part of the way it goes. If you take a torpedo and you find a torpedo out of a submarine, and say it's gonna, this is a boat there, and it doesn't go like that and hit the boat. It goes a zigzag course like this. It has an automatic pilot inside there that guides the little left and left, right, correct, and it does a zigzag course till it strikes the boat. If anybody here is ever sailed a boat, anybody ever sailed a boat? Yeah. Okay. You notice if you're going to sail from here to Catalina, you grab that tiller and go straight there. Huh? In other words, you're continually correcting. Are you a bad person when you go too far this way? Or are you a bad person when you go too far that way? In other words, it's just a natural movement of the boat. Am I correct? Oh, thanks a lot. Thank you. It's a natural movement of the boat. You see what I mean? Well, that's a natural course of life. So if we have to give ourselves a right to make mistakes. We have to, one of the things that compulsive, I found out myself as a compulsive reader, I've got to do is stop being critical about me and everybody else. Give myself freedom to live. And how I give myself freedom to live is not judging other people and allowing them to live their life. Wanting them to live their life. Giving them the freedom to live their life. Because when I give them that, I have it. You see, I have it. But only I can do that. Only I can make that choice. I'm going to stop now and have a drink. You guys got a question? Yeah. Well, what happened when I was baptized? Okay, the question is, what was my experience of God when I was a kid and how did it change? Okay, I was baptized a Catholic. Okay. And out of that, I was going to Catholic school and I learned the first thing, one of the things that really I totally disagree with. Nobody has to agree with me, it's my program. I don't give a shit what you think. Really, I don't. But they bullshitted me. They told me that I was born in sin, that I was a bad person, because Eve ate an apple in the beginning of time. You know what? I pass on that. You know, so what happens is as time went along, I was an Overeaters Anonymous in the 60s. And in the 60s, do you realize the spiritual revolution that went on in the United States? I mean, the Ram Dass and all these guys were coming out, somebody gave me a book that had all these phallic symbols in it and said, hang out with it. And I did, you know, and I remember. And I remember I kept it in the bathroom. Well, that's where you want to keep all your spiritual literature. I kept it in the bathroom. And one of the pages there, the guy quoted a guy named Grishoff. He quoted him saying, you cannot escape, and you cannot escape to first you realize you're a prisoner. And what am I a prisoner of? I'm a prisoner of my belief systems. I'm a prisoner of my belief systems, and I'm a prisoner of what I think. So what I needed to do was not make myself wrong, not to say those thinkings are wrong, but I needed to investigate them and say, well, this thinking works for me. To be Mexican is bad. That thinking doesn't work for me. If God wanted me to be Italian, she would have made me Italian. You know what I mean? So, in other words, but it made me Italian. They probably wanted to know why I called God she, because what happens is our father, who art in heaven, I mean, my dad was really, he loved me. Totally, but he was very strict. Very strict. But my mother was really loving. I mean, I could do no wrong. Even though I was doing wrong, she loved me anyway. It's totally unconditional. Totally unconditional. And so when I say our mother, who are, you know, it makes sense to me. I realize that I had that nurturing, you know, there's that thing. And so through the process, I got involved in I started meditating. I mean, I told them I was sober around 10 years and talked to my sponsor. And he lived in Hawaii, so when he talks, I listen to him. And he told me that I should start meditating. And I was, so what I did is I went to the Bodhi tree and bought a bunch of books of meditating and read about it. That isn't it. That's called reading about meditation. That's not meditation. It doesn't count. You know what I mean? And then I ended up going to the University of Oriental Studies. I saw this guy, Shenzhen Young. He had just come from, he was a Buddhist monk that had gone off to Japan. How he ended up going to Japan, he went on a drug deal that went bad. And he ended up checking into a monastery, and he became a monk. And he was Jewish, you know what I mean? He was Jewish, and he came back, and he was stayed there around 10 years, and he came back, and he taught meditation there at the University of Oriental Studies. And I went and talked to him, and he told me I had one of the most grossest minds he'd ever run into. And my mind is just the same as yours, you know. What he considered grossness was I was hypnotized by drama, by what wasn't happening. My life was totally focused on palace, dynasty, work, relations, you know, all these things out here in my mind going on, you know. And here I am right here, okay. You see, so what happens is he taught me, you know, I learned how to meditate. Through that experience of meditation, you realize you, over a period of time, you have the experience. It isn't an experience. What happens is you have the realization that God is in all of us. In all of us right now, always has been, always will be. There's nowhere else to go, and the best way to reach that is, I can tell you, let me tell you how. Okay. That's how. That's how. And what happens is that as that goes on, the way I see God changes. And then there's a lot of good stuff out now. I mean, I went to a retreat at Esalen. There was a guy who wrote the book on the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, and Pogan Rinpoche. I went to a 3-day retreat there. And Oh, how are they? Okay. Okay, have you abstained? Are you abstained?
3 days.
Okay. Do you have a food sponsor?
Yes.
Get a food sponsor. Okay. Step one is like our powerless over refined sugars and starches. Step one. Get a food sponsor. Call into the food sponsor. Okay? And after you've abstained over a period of time.
How did you do that?
How did I do that? I abstained. I called in my food. I called in my food for, it was like, I was afraid that you only have to call in for 3 weeks. But I called in for 2 months because I was so afraid I would slip back. I called in my food, this food sponsor. And then I got into the steps. I took my inventory. You need to take your inventory. You find the power, you know, you like I was talking about, you find the power greater than yourself, but it all stuff. None of it works. None of it, it'll be a philosophy. It'll be just another philosophy. It'll be like another religion unless you abstain. Because at that point, unless you abstain and get on calling accidents, it's just, because it's what causes the compulsively. It's our thing.
When did that change?
Probably after about 18 months. And I didn't, you know, it changes so gradual that you don't know. See, but the thing is, you just have that, it's not like taking a pill, come to 2 meetings, you're okay. That's like I do group for promises, right? And it's like it's a 30-day program of promises. It's like they could check in there for 30 days. They don't do drugs and alcohol. They're supposed to leave there. You think they're okay? No. The wrinkles are out of their stomach, and that's all. They're still stuck with the insanity. And compulsive overeating is the same thing. It's the insanity. You know, I mean, it's self. Hey, George, what's cooking? It's a self obsession. It's a self-obsession, how we can purely comparing ourselves to other people, and the reason we're comparing ourselves to other people is only for one reason, is because we have low self-esteem. What causes low self-esteem is, what do I think about me? Is with low self-esteem. And see, these things are confronted, but we can't confront them if we're eating. We can't confront. It's like an alcoholic drinking. Or an addict doing drugs. They can't confront their issues because they dumped themselves up.
What is it?
Right.
Just saying, maybe get some other people
asking. Okay. Yeah.
What is your
action today? Today, right? Let's see. I eat. I get up in the morning. I have. That power drink by Dr. Schultz. And I have. I have prunes. I have 5 or 6 prunes. And then for lunch, I'll have yogurt, or I'll have salmon, or I'll have tuna. Something like that. Then I'll have fruit, and I'll have like cantaloupe, sliced cantaloupe, sliced apple. Huh?
3 meals, no snacks.
There's regular 3 meals. I eat ice cream.
Okay.
Okay. Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm not going to sit down and eat a gallon. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not finished with her. What else do you want to ask me?
How do you explain how, really how to be in the now? How do you turn things over?
I find out I don't, you mean how do I let things go?
Yeah, you have to turn over.
I find out if I don't grab them, I don't have to let them go. You understand? Okay. And another, then when it's too late for me, when I've already grabbed them, what I do is I just tell myself, Scott's got it. You know, she's charged. Doesn't need my help. You know, it just thank God for taking care of it. But I have a basic understanding that, I tell you what, when I come and I'm going to teach meditation or something, I have to take some guy out and stand him on the street. I'll tell him to look at cars going by. You know, I go stand out here in San Vicente. Well, there goes an Olds, Rolls, BMW, Explorer, another BMW, Jag, another Ford. You know, watch them going by, right? Watch them going by. What would happen is some Hummer goes by and you reach over and grab the doorknob. And drag your ass down the street with it. Thoughts, this is why meditation helps. Do you meditate? Try it. But how meditation helps is when those cars are going by, I don't identify with the cars. I recognize those cars. So, but meditation does, what it does, it helps me to realize that thoughts are like cars. And what I do is I allow the cars to go by. Isn't that a crock? They're going to go by anyway. And thinking is the same way. I am always going to think. There'll always be thoughts going by. I have no control over what I'm thinking. You know? But what thoughts I feed, decide to feed, is what comes forward. Like the Lord's Prayer says, thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. In other words, it's telling me that what I hold in my mind long enough will manifest itself in my life. In other words, the Buddhists tell you, not to think, don't feed unwholesome thoughts. You know, and unwholesome thoughts can be a critical thought. It's subtle. And critical thoughts are caused, if we're able to realize this, critical thoughts are caused by self-esteem. And self-esteem is caused by the way we see ourselves. And what we need to do is observe the thinking we have, that the thoughts we have formed about ourselves, observe them non-judgmentally so we can let them go and realize they're lies and they don't work for me. And I still eat ice cream. You can't take that away from me. And after years, I deserve it. I'm 72, I deserve ice cream. Yeah. It doesn't take over. Oh, she wants to know, what do I do when the allergy of the body of alcohol and drugs takes over?
Or food.
Well, it doesn't take over because it doesn't take over. How? Why doesn't? Because in my mind, because I'm in a different place. I'm eating for another reason. You know, in other words, I'm not forcing down the feeling. I resolve my feelings. I observe my feelings. You know, I'm a feeling, you know. I mean, feelings aren't facts. Not necessarily facts, but they're feelings, and I have to acknowledge them. Saying, if you can just realize that self-esteem's got a lot to do here, it drives us. The way we see ourselves drives us. It'll drive us until we come to terms with the belief systems we have that form the thoughts we have about ourselves. See? Because we're otherwise, unless we do that, we're forced to go through life being cool. And the reason we have to go through life being cool is because we can't be who we are. You understand? And the reason we can't be who we are is because we think we are who we think we are, and we're not. You know what I mean? Like, I used to have to go through life pretending I was Italian. You know? And that's a ripoff. How would you like to go through your life? Wouldn't it be a ripoff to go through your life and not to really get to be who you are? Just to have to be a counterfeit person. And what's wrong is when you go through life being a counterfeit person, what you don't do is you don't get to receive love. And the reason you don't get to receive love is because you don't present that. See, if I presented this podium as me, and say this podium is me, and then me here, you give the podium love, I don't get any. Because I don't present me. And the reason I don't present me is the way I see myself, see. And the way I see myself is what drove me to eat compulsively. You see, when I resolve that, a lot of things change. See? That doesn't mean I can binge out on. I just couldn't do it anymore. I just can't think of doing it. Does that make sense to you? Yeah.
Now, how do you deal with doing meditation on a regular basis if you've got a pretty busy life? Do you find time each day, or
sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. You know, I like to say I meditate every day, all the time, meditate every day, all the time, but I haven't. You know. But usually when I do, I get up in the morning. But right, I don't know, I got my life go through phases, you know, sometimes I get up early in the morning, sometimes I can't, you know. You know, I mean, I'll say that night, I'm going to get up, and I'm going to meditate, you know, I'm going to get up, I set the alarm for 4:45, and I shut it off, yeah. I'm sorry, what's the question?
If you switch from one addiction to another, like from smoking to gambling, eating, whatever, you quit one and then you start another. The reason is because you cannot stop identifying with your childhood.
Okay, no, it's childhood fears. What it is that we suffer, right? We suffer. Genuinely, we suffer. And what causes suffering is thinking. And if you suffer long enough, you'll look for a way to dull the suffering. Now, alcohol dulled it. So, the cigarettes just allowed me to live with it. Food dulled it. But see, as I abstained from each one, as I abstained, I would never go back to drink again. Forget about that. I ended up at Salvation Army. 18 felony counts against me. Son adopted away from me. I'm not going back to that. I'm not going back to smoking three packs a day because I could barely breathe. See? I'm not going back to compulsive overeating because I'm not willing to give up me. I'm not willing to give up me. And so what we have to do with this is not a matter of going from one thing to the other. What it is, and I just got to keep it basically simple. What it is, and we're just done, is you come in, get a food sponsor, get the gray sheet, weigh and measure your food, call your food in for 3 weeks to a food sponsor, and then begin working, get a sponsor, and begin working the steps. I do not know of another way because that's the way I did it. See, I don't know of another way to do it, but I don't know because there's what we have to do. I mean, we have an opportunity to begin living our life for the first time. You know, do you guys want to have to die and come back and do this shit again? that's the nature of the universe. Is you got to keep doing it to get it right. You want to come back again? Wouldn't you rather work something else out next time around? Well, I would. I don't know about you. I don't want to work on compulsive overeating, alcoholism, or whatever else in my next life. I'd rather work out something more fun, you know. See, okay, time. Thank you.
Well.